Blog Talk Radio.
Time being, Matt, and with me, as always, one of the biggest troopers I've ever met in my life, Dennis. How's it going, Dennis?
Going good, Matt. Going good. I'm doing something a little different this week, so you might hear me grunt and whimper a little bit here and there. I'm coming to you live from 75 mile an hour on I-295 outside Richmond. Ladies and gentlemen, don't try this at home. Well, I guess you can't try it at home unless, you know, you really want to screw your house up and drive through it, but I don't recommend that. But
yeah.
Nobody
Matt,
ever told
me
not.
Mobile
yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah, nobody ever told VDOT the smooth side of the road goes down, so. Or goes up, yeah, I got that shit backwards. Yeah, see, now I'm thinking just like a VDOT worker. Hell, I should get a job with them. The smooth side goes up, jackasses. But
yeah.
Other than that, yeah. Hey, I do have a. I've got a quick shout out to do. First. You know, happy belated Father's Day to all the fathers out there and the mothers that are taking on both roles. And happy Father's Day to my dad. I wish he were still with us. On the other note, if you have any outdoorsmen in your family, make sure to check them for ticks when they come back in from outdoors. Very dear friend of ours just passed away on Friday. Actually, is our son-in-law's father. He got a tick bite, contracted Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and spent, I think, 2 weeks or so in the hospital and passed away. So don't forget the country music song. Check them for ticks.
Yes, and my condolences to the family. I mean, it's, you know, it's always hard, and especially when it's something that seems like it's so insignificant, like something the size of a tick. But there's just a lot of stuff that's out there that it really doesn't take much and is completely life-changing.
Yeah, most definitely. It's amazing how fragile the human body truly is as far as the immune system and so forth, that something the size of a tick can give you a life-ending disease. But definitely want to give my condolences to my son-in-law, Will, and his three brothers, kind of out of the blue. And
yeah.
A huge rest in peace to Floyd. You were a pretty damn fun guy. But
yeah.
Aside from that,
definitely
how's your week been, my brother?
I really can't complain, honestly. I mean, it's Monday, so my week has been all right. It's Monday.
Yeah, well,
we're used to this conversation on Wednesday.
yeah, really.
No, it was good, and photos to come for Father's Day. I ended up going... myself, my brother, my dad, my mom, and my brother's girlfriend, who's in town from Mexico. And no, it's not Sarah, in case anybody's wondering, because we all know Sarah's in Mexico. No, her name's Jasmine, totally different person. We went out and took the boat out yesterday, just kind of hung out in the playpen, ate Subway for lunch, and tooled around, went up and down the Chicago River. Photos to come. So, going around, just a, you know, gorgeous day, low 80s, sunny, anchored out for a couple hours, got out of the water about 1:15-ish, got back in about 8:45, 9 o'clock, so spent a good portion of the day on the water. And then, Dennis, this is where I'm just one of the luckiest SOBs ever. I got to have half shell yesterday, too, so that was Tuesday and Sunday. So twice in 1 week, I got to eat some badass king crab legs.
You mentioned that last week, and we ended up, the hell day did we go? Saturday night, we went to Captain George's in Williamsburg. It's a seafood buffet. So I released my inner fat kid and ate snow crab till I couldn't see straight. I'm certain that I've increased my sodium levels and my body probably a thousandfold. I got some very strange looks when I asked them if they would bring me a cart to help get my fat ass out the door. But,
do you have any
stomach
wheelbarrows on hand?
Yeah, exactly.
You said it was what, snow crab they have there?
Yeah, they've got snow crab. They've got a little bit of everything. What's called Norfolk Special, which is some crab, shrimp, all kinds of stuff in a mix and the sauce. And it's absolutely delicious. But it was fantastic. CPR Graham, actually, he and his wife, Leanne, went down with Hope and I. So the four of us had a wonderful dinner. Went and played in the Yankee Candle store and then walked around. Williamsburg has a big outlet mall. But we went and walked around there to try to burn off some of the calories. I don't think it helped. But nonetheless, my inner fat kid was happy.
So you were out there and you were having, you went, you had food, and then you walked around and had crab sweats, just like meat sweats, but crab.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Well, I guess in the overall, I probably ate 4 or 5 pounds of crab legs. I mean, I had 4 plates full. 3 and 4 clusters per plate. So when
you go for crab, does it turn into a man versus food challenge?
Pretty close. Pretty close. You know, CPR Graham kept saying, man, We really need to go down there. The crab legs are great. And I'm like, man, I don't know. You know, their profit margin's going to take a hit when I get in line. He's like, oh, come on now. I'm like, no, dude, you don't understand. I'm going to release the inner fat kid in me. And, yeah, their profits for the day are going to take a hit. I think he was kind of surprised when I came back with my plate with like 4 clusters of crab legs on it. But they got prime rib, they've got oysters Rockefeller, I mean, you name it. It's just a giant seafood buffet. They've got three long buffet bars. I mean, it's not like this is, you know, Golden Corral or something like that where they've got just, you know, a small selection, man. This thing is massive selection.
Well, here's my question. What do you say it was per person?
Say again?
What do you say it was per person for the all-you-can-eat there?
34, I think.
Okay. So, when I went on Tuesday, my tab, food, drinks, appetizers, all that stuff, my bill without tip was $126. So, and that was for 2 people. When we went there last night, there was 5 of us. Everybody who was on the boat went there, and 3 of us got the crab. My brother and I, we each had 2 Blue Moons apiece, so it's not like we're, you know, boozing it up or anything. And we got 2 appetizers, all that. Our tab was $200 for 5 people. So for $80, not even,
yeah.
$74, we fed
three more people. Well, what the hell did you do the first time that you had a $126 tab to begin with?
The 2 orders of crab at $34.50 apiece, plus the Blue Point oysters, which are, I think, like $9 or something like that. The bottle of wine at $22.95 plus the extra glass of wine that we got after the bottle. So yeah, that's where all that came from.
Yeah, well, tip included. Hope and I had all you can eat snow crab, you know, the prime ribs. I mean, you name it, just anything you can think of seafood wise. The 2 of us. Tip included was $85.
Yeah, well, on that note.
So, So I think I got a better deal, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. Well, on that note, tonight, Dennis, are you excited too? Because we always just have awesome, awesome conversation. Daniel Hoven from Haunted Encounters on that was on Bio Channel is going to be joining us tonight. He's actually been on some pretty cool stuff, like watching him on Facebook recently, which starts to create a lot of questions for me. And just, you know how we work. I mean, you see,
oh, yeah.
You were there? Well, what about this? Oh, you were there? Well, what'd you do this? Oh, how'd you, you know? So, yeah, this is going to be definitely, definitely fun, as it always is. And Daniel should be with us right now. What's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, Daniel. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Hey, thanks for coming.
So are you hungry yet or no?
Uh-oh. Did we lose him?
He didn't drop the call, but he was sounding kind of staticky now, didn't he? And he dropped the call.
There we go.
All right, so back to food. I have to say, who is listening also is Helmy.
Hey, Helminator, how are you, sir? But, hey, I just found out about this tonight. You know, I told you a couple of weeks ago that our son moved out, he and his girlfriend, and another couple that they're very close friends with. They all rented a house together. So we went by there tonight to grab him so we could all, you know, he wanted to take me out to Father's Day dinner, which, by the way, thank you, Andy. I appreciate it, son. Anyway, while I'm there, of course, one of the first questions I get is, so, Dennis, do you sense any ghosts here? Well, I'm not really, you know, tuned in, but why? Well, story that we've got is some guy killed himself in this house, and we've had some kind of strange crap happen. Okay, how strange and, like, what kind of crap? Well, I was washing dishes, and I hear a beep and turn around, and something started the microwave. Something pushed the 9 and started the microwave. And I'm like, okay. And, like, cabinets open and close, basement door opens and closes, and I'm like, well, I got a feeling I know where CPR East is going to go. I have a good feeling I know where a future investigation for the Eastern team is going to be.
And I'm sure you probably don't want a plug of what the name of the place is, right?
No, it's a private residence.
Oh.
It's the house that my son and his girlfriend and their friend moved into.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the restaurant that you guys went to.
Oh, no. No, that's...
Okay.
Yeah, not there. This is at my son's house.
Ah. And did he choose that house on purpose?
Actually, yes, he did, because it has a huge two-car garage plus a carport, and he's a big engine head. He loves to tinker on the cars and build them and all that happy stuff. So
yeah,
that was,
and I know he's quite
that
the
was
scooter,
all he cared.
Hey, since I can't Facebook message you.
Hey, this is, yeah, sorry about that. Funny thing, Dennis, I'm actually on the road myself driving back from Best Buy. My phone, I've learned that Sony's phones, as much as I love them, they light themselves on fire internally. So this is the second time now, 3 weeks, I've had to go get a new phone. They give you a, in this case, they give you a loaner phone. That's the world we live in nowadays. They give you an iPhone. So I'm literally on my way back to the house getting my replacement. And then I'll drive an hour or 2 days to pick up my new phone. Hopefully it doesn't melt down again.
The phone literally melted down?
Well, you know, they said that's a known problem with Sony's. I guess the customer service website said they're known to get to 55 to 60 degrees externally. And it drains the battery because it's trying to cool it down. And, I mean, it's probably not bad all day. That's a shame because, I mean, I love the phone. It's the only smartphone I've ever had. But, you know, it's first world problems. It kind of sucks living in a small town because I have to drive an hour to Best Buy.
Well... Helmy was just talking about how the spontaneous combustion app is rad. So you might want to eliminate that one out of your phone.
Yeah, I think it's Candy Crush. It's actually killing my phone.
So wait, just in case, what phone did you have that melted down?
A Sony Xperia Ion. Absolutely amazing phone, except for the whole meltdown thing, which I'm learning about.
Well, there is that.
Yeah, there is that, you know. But luckily, Best Buy's insurance, here's the plug, it's the best. You just pay $10 a month, and you can break a phone unlimited, and they just give it to you for free.
Cool.
All right, well, that's where we're going to have to start getting sponsors of Best Buy and Sony and all those.
Hey, man, they'll take it. Best Buy's struggling. They'll take it.
Yeah, what's been going on, man? How you been? You had some interesting experiences from what I've been seeing on Facebook. And
yeah, I've been traveling. I've been on the road almost nonstop, taking care of a side project I have going on. So I've been in Medina, Ohio, which is about a 2-hour drive. Been in and out of there, you know, last week, this week. Went out with some good friends of mine, actually, a young lady I'm working with now, Rebecca Kirschbaum, who is, let me just say, absolutely amazing. She is working directly with a very well-known person in the field. I don't, you know, we don't name that person, but one of the most respected females, in my opinion, in the paranormal field. So she's been working with her, and we actually met last year at a fundraiser for a historical society in Ohio. And we've been working together on some things. So we went out to Ohio State just for my birthday and to film a couple things here and there. So that was a good time. I've been out there before, but I've never been there during the daytime. They actually had an antique hearse and ambulance show out front. And, you know, then they just let us kind of walk around all day inside. So I love OSR. The people there, I think it's a historical society, so I've never met the owner per se. But the volunteers there, man, they're top-notch. Like, if I was ever lucky enough to own a haunted property, I'd want the Ohio State Reformatory people working for me because they're just a class act, man.
Yeah, that's one place I... Well, Dennis, you weren't too far from there, right?
No, actually, I grew up in Ohio, but I was a couple of hours away from Ohio State, and it was still active when I lived up there anyway.
Oh.
So it was still a functioning prison. I also ended up, I worked in Moundsville, you know, which is West Virginia State Prison. And I worked there while it was still a functioning prison. So,
oh, that's cool. That's cool.
I was just never lucky enough that, you know, I could go through and do an investigation after all the, you know, after they closed down and it became known as paranormal hotspots.
Yeah, I've actually never been to Moundsville. Moundsville is one of the ones on my list I kind of want to X out. And it's a shame because I go to Trans-Allegheny. I've been to Trans-Allegheny 3 times, I think. Moundsville is just the opposite direction. I know Jordan was there when she did Paranormal Challenge a few years back, and she, you know, she has a pretty cool place.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure everybody has seen it on TV and whatnot. And it's just a massive location. But, you know,
yeah.
Like I said, I mean, the bar that we frequented when I was working there, I mean, I spent, 6 months, I guess, working in Moundsville. And the bar that we frequented was actually in the shadow of the prison itself. So, it's a massive place.
Yeah, I want to get down there. I mean, I like Ohio State. I mean, just because I'm a big movie guy, so Shawshank, obviously, film. They're having a big anniversary event for it in September. But no, I was in. I went from Medina, Ohio. Then I was out there in Mansfield. Then I was over. I went to surprise my good friends, the Haunted Housewives. I remember I met them through Paranormal Challenge a few years ago. Great ladies. Kathy Weber actually runs the Willoughby Ghost Walk, which is super popular because she does such a good job with it. I mean, Ghost Walks is always kind of a crapshoot whether it's going to be good or not. But she always has a full house, so we surprised them on Friday and ended up doing some cool stuff at the coal mine depot that I think Haunted Collector was just at from what they were telling me. So that, and then I went down to Harrisburg, and I was actually doing some professional lecturing there outside of the whole, you know, paranormal. I actually, I'm an independent marketing consultant, so I do a lot of college lectures for undergrads about to get out. So I was there doing that. And then on the way, I had a commitment I had to go to in Centralia, Pennsylvania, better known as Real Silent Hill. It was a pretty cool place, you know. Nothing, it wasn't as massive as I thought. There was like four houses left, but cool thing was I saw there's a time capsule that's going to be opening next year.
When's the time capsule from?
I want to say the 80s.
The 80s.
I'm not sure, honestly.
So when time capsules were popular.
Yeah,
I remember doing them when I was a kid in school.
Yeah, you know, I remember doing it too. And I'm like, oh, I wonder whatever happened to that. It's probably better they don't open it.
Oh, and Dennis, this is directed towards you, I'm sure. Homie did post in chat when you say that you worked at the penitentiary, that worked actually means inmate.
Oh, so you were working on the assembly lines.
Well, I mean, you know, there was something about license plates, but I skipped all of that. By the way, Helmy, fight me. No, actually, I didn't work in the prison. I worked in the town that, I worked in Moundsville. At the time, I was doing hazardous waste recovery. So I worked for a hazmat company in one of the plants there in town that was closing down, and we just had to disassemble the plant. It was actually pretty cool. It was an Olin chemical plant, and it was the last active plant in the United States that made mustard gas. So, and it was amazing to find out how many different acids and so forth go into that. Good Lord. But, yeah, I mean, it was still, you know, it was pretty cool. I spent 6 months living, you know, within a stone's throw of the prison.
You know, funny story about Moundsville. I was actually, about a month ago, I was doing a lecture at Robert Morris University in Pittsburgh. And it was a parapsychology class, really interesting class, and I really enjoyed it because it was more about understanding how maybe psychologically we maybe, you know, kind of manifest our own paranormal experiences. You know, I agree with that. I do agree that a lot of experiences, including maybe some of my own, just maybe are mind playing tricks on us. But it was an interesting class nonetheless. And they were going to Moundsville. It's kind of like a capstone field trip at the end of it. They were going to go, you know, they were going to go do an investigation, about 20 of them. And I remember they go, well, what advice can you give us for, you know, if we're going to go down to Moundsville? And I always say the same thing usually. I'm like, you know, just have fun with it. You know, don't take it too seriously. Be respectful of everybody there. Don't make too much noise. I said, you know what? They're like, well, what do you think can get us good results? I'm like, guys, you know, I'm like, if you can, bring a couple of prison outfits, a couple of shanks, maybe some porn or something. And the teacher stands up and then we understand that you may be able to do that, but I don't think our students can walk in with shanks in a prison. I just kind of put my head down and laughed about it. I kind of got a little carried away. So the kids thought it was funny. The professor was a little bit concerned, but sort of realized, I guess, my love for role-playing sometimes is not really good for students going on field trips.
Yeah, you know, as long as the students had fun, that's all that counts.
Yeah, and from what I understand, a lot of them,
So let the professor have a coronary, he'll get over it.
Yeah, now a lot of them were tweeting pictures and stuff, and it looked like they were having a blast. And that's really what matters, honestly. Like, when you're with 20, 30 people, all you can do is have a good time with it, you know?
Oh, definitely. Well, that's all we do with this program. We just have a good time with it. You know, pick on people like, you know, Helmy, and it's fun.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people don't know, like, people, when I remember when the show came out, they thought we were just kind of cast together. I've actually been friends with Helmy for 2010. As I tell my mom, he's some older gentleman I met on the internet that I want to be friends with. And we actually, you know, we're kind of, we were running in the same circle when I got into paranormal, and we kind of hit it off just because, you notice with our art, we have the same issues, or I like to say the same set of humor. But it was funny. I remember the producers were surprised we had actually met for the first time because we were just getting along so well. And they were a little bit freaked out by our obsession with the human centipede and Chernobyl, but they eventually grew to love it, so I hope.
I see a lot of stuff between you guys about the human centipede and Chernobyl and
and Helmator and I told this to Helmy when he was on the program with us a while back. I'm jealous as all hell that you guys got to go to Chernobyl and check that place out, man.
Oh, we never got to go. We didn't go to Chernobyl. I was begging for it, but that was not in the plans. I mean, him and I are planning on going there one day, hopefully, and running out and just living off the land for a couple of years. But I wish we'd go to Chernobyl. I was that was one of the places I begged for, but was told no.
That's right. It's my turn for brain fart.
Yeah, and then when that happens, I'm gonna. Homie says we will write that down.
Minus the airfare, a one-day trip to Chernobyl is actually less than most Honda locations, from what I understand. And it's weird, they have this itinerary, the one tour guide I was looking through. You know, I don't think Ping Pong's sending us there anytime soon, which makes me sad because they already went there with Destination Truth. But on the one tour guide, it was like, you know, all this creepy stuff. Then it's like lunch break, feed the ducks to Chernobyl Pond, and then went back to creepy stuff. I had a good laugh at that.
Well, no, but before you guys go, I'm gonna make a point to fly to the East Coast and the West Coast and shake your hands, because that will be the last time that I will do that without a hazmat suit.
Well, hopefully when you find us in Chernobyl, we'll have like 5 hands.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why the hazmat suit will be there. Fully zipped up, make sure that there's no leaks in it, and I will shake all 5 of your hands when you come back.
Yeah, see, I used to crack jokes that, you know, I spent 6 years doing hazmat, traveled all over the country. I used to crack jokes that, you know, someday I'm going to have kids and I won't even have to worry about an electric bill. I can set them over in the corner and have an automatic nightlight. Which, I mean, I never actually played with radioactive, but I played with enough other crap that, you know, I'm still scratching my head going, how in the hell did I not, you know. I mean, I remember a few days going in, I was still drunk from partying the night before. I'm still wondering how I never managed to kill myself. But, yeah. Hazmat is definitely interesting. But.
So I like one of those.
Yeah, some of the suits are pretty sweet. Some of them are just hot as hell. I remember the one I hated absolutely most was called an Acid King. And it was like wearing an entire tire wrapped around you.
Ugh.
Just hot as hell. Scuba tank on your back, you're coming out every, I think I only had a 30-minute pack, you know, because otherwise the suit's so damn big you can't actually move around and do work. But, yeah, it was some nasty crap that I ended up playing with from time to time. So, on the bucket list, aside from, you know, Moundsville is on your bucket list, Chernobyl's on your bucket list, what is the number one location, number one on the top of your bucket list?
I want to say, I might get the number wrong. I want to say Unit 951 or Unit 971. It's over in Japan. It was something that was under wraps for a while. Actually, it was war crimes that happened. It happened during World War II. It was the Japanese version of the Holocaust. But they said anywhere from about 100 to 200,000 people were killed because of this chemical warfare testing ground. And it's just coming out recently because after World War II ended, the U.S. actually, of all people, cut a deal with the Japanese, granting them immunity to a certain extent for, like, you know, I think 15 years in exchange for the chemical warfare information to keep away from the Soviets. So, and there were bad things going on. I'm talking about pregnant women being injected with the bubonic plague and cut open, still alive, to see what would happen. They would actually, that's how they discovered how cold it had to be for hypothermia to kill somebody. They were using people as guinea pigs. And it's just coming out now because there was a cover-up for a long time, but it's, you know, been declassified. So, you know, but it's like one of the things where I'd like to go there on my own. I would never go there with camera because I just, you know, I don't. There's a fine line, I think, between wanting to go somewhere and exploiting it. I, you know, just like a lot of people want to get off the woods. I would go there, but I would never use a camera there. It just seems like, I don't know, maybe it's just too soon. Because I guess our program is built, most paranormal programs, you know, for better or worse, are built towards the evil place, the scary place, and, you know. So I guess if we were going somewhere for television, the one place that I really wanted to go, and actually, interesting fact, was on our locations for season one, but got nixed last minute because of the local government in Texas, of all places. We had Waco, Texas, the compound, the one half the part of it that's still standing. We had the compound signed for a shoot. We ended up going to the silent theater instead. But I am a huge cult fanatic. I think it's so interesting, the cult leaders, what they do. And I would have had a heyday. You know, I had this crazy idea in my head of just taunting the hell out of David Koresh and the Branch Davidian members. And I mean, you know, I honestly, if you look back on it, it should never have happened the way it did. The ATF actually really screwed that up by not being prepared for the fact that they had guns in there. But that would, to me, that would be just domestically for television, huge. You go to the Branch Davidian compound in Waco, Texas.
Yeah, that, I have to agree. I do believe that, you know, ATF just completely blew that one. But, you know, I mean, well, they knew what the hell they were walking into. But I definitely think there's got to be some trapped energy there that, you know, would just be off the charts.
I mean, I absolutely. And my whole thing is, you know, I'm very open, you know, as far as, you know, what's next. I don't know. I never claim to know. Nobody knows until it happens. But, you know, if David Koresh in spirit is still there, I wonder how he feels knowing that everything he said was completely wrong. Or maybe we'll find, you know, maybe he's completely right. Who knows? But I just, because, you know, I think those type of, I guess, not targets, but those type of characters, they're good to do TV with just because, I mean, you have your set evil. It's kind of like George Hodel, you know, megalomaniac, somebody you can't antagonize and not feel bad. Because I'm not a big provoker, you know. I don't like yelling in basements. That's just not my style. And we tried to set up these locations, even at a housing mansion. We didn't do anything there to even try to provoke. Because in all reality, you know, yeah, the Masons were there, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, end of the day, man, that was a sad story out there. You know, that was tragic. None of those people deserved anything to happen to them. It was on accident.
Yeah. But another one that I think would be quite interesting, and I can't remember for the life of me, they were trying to catch some Hale-Bopp comet, and I can't remember the name of the group.
Was it the Jamestown one?
The purple sneaker or purple Nikes and all that, and they committed.
Yeah, the Kool-Aid, yeah. Yeah, because that was that's actually, I believe that was the one out there in another country where this one senator got murdered because people tried to run from that and it got gunned down by the cult.
Yeah.
Any cult just for some reason really just gets to me because it's amazing to me how intelligent people can make these bad decisions because I'm not one to sit here and say anybody that joins the cult is an absolute idiot. It's not true. It's more about the power of persuasion by the actual leader, you know, being able to fill a void with whatever twist of charisma they have. And I always think that in general, in movies, television, any entertainment, the bad guy is a lot more interesting when he truly believes in what he's doing. That always really, like, I don't know, for some reason, I always think that a really true villain believes that they're the good guy in their mind. It's just compelling to me how, you know, people's minds can work so backwards.
Well, and it's interesting that you should bring up the cult stuff. There was, and I actually hadn't heard of this one up until I saw a show on, it was either Bio or History or something like that, but they had that one cult that there was the Indian guy from India that was running it, and his, like, right-hand woman was the one that was handling all the finances, and then he was deported, and he came back in, and all that, to where they set up this full huge compound, and I think And if you know the one I'm talking about, I think it was in Utah.
Yeah.
That they bought
all that land.
Part
of that.
Yeah, that dude was just the biggest scam artist in the world, and he knew it. You know, he'd show up in like a gold, like Rolls Royce and stuff, like, and people were, and he said in his prophecy, quote unquote, "You have to donate all your money to me so I can make the I can make whatever god that or you know spirit they're praying to, I can make it happy." But then he shows up with this damn gold-plated Rolls Royce, and people are okay with that. There has to be a moment where you're like, "All right, well, I signed over the deed to my land, the title of my house. I've given you absolutely everything. I live in complete poverty now because you said this is what should be done, and you show up in a fucking gold Rolls Royce. Like, are you kidding me?"
Yeah, you know, Helmy lost actually all of his pay from the show on that scam. I'm kidding.
I don't know if he's listening or not, but he did log out of chat, so we'll see if you heard that one. I'll just send him that archive clip.
Oh man.
There is a friendship ending. No, no, he's between you and I mean, we've talked a lot over the times that you've been on the show and stuff like that. Between you and Helmy and Jordan and Chelsea, I mean, just all, I have to say, some of the greatest people I've ever talked to. And I'm not saying that because we're on air. Like, I tell you that normally. I mean, just in general, like, that's why we love talking to you.
Ah, I appreciate that. We don't take ourselves too seriously. That's one of the good things. It's funny. We were always like kind of bummed out about the first season because they made us be so serious. And like in reality, we're just like the biggest. Like we have a weird sense of humor though. Like I don't, you know, if you ever want to see stuff from like the real world, you know, you can have like one of us, you know, trying to take pictures while somebody's sleeping or doing the Buffalo Bill dance on a hotel completely sober, you know, just because we thought it was funny. We had a bad habit. I mean, it was just like, we had fun, you know, and that's this, you know, for me and I know for Helmy and Jordan, it was just fun. And we enjoyed talking to everybody in the community because it's what we, you know, it's, we're, you know, I take a lot of pride in the fact that I think that our show kind of almost, it kind of represents the real, you know, the boots on the ground because before we were doing it, after we were doing it, it's not like, you know, we're here to fill characters. Oh, now we're ghost hunters. You know, in general, it's just, it was cool, I think, that all of us kind of came from the same background that everybody else comes from.
Yeah, and it was you, it was either you or it was Helmy that were having this conversation. We were talking about, like, the biggest pranks that you guys did on the road and stuff, and it was you and Helmy that did the pizza box thing to...
Oh, my God. Jordan, we basically stacked all the pizza boxes from production in front of the room, and then we actually took a picture of herself, and we printed one off, right? She just took a bad picture somewhere, and we took it off the internet, and we cut out a circle, and we actually put it at the bottom of a small Dixie cup glass cup, and we taped it to her eye hole, so when she looked out, she would see herself looking straight back at her.
Yeah.
That was actually the last time they ever put us all, like, next to each other in a hotel. But, you know, I mean, it was funny stuff. Like, stuff like that. Like, I remember Helmy and I wanted to go to Salem, and we didn't have a car, but they had two Suburbans they had for the whole stretch. That was for production. So we did kind of innocently tell the front desk, "Hey, we're with TV, guys. We just need to get our wallet out of the SUV," and they would give us the keys. And then 6 hours later, they're calling, "Do one of you guys have the Suburbans? We're not mad, but we're also supposed to be going out to Fenway." It was in Boston. "Like, we need to leave. We told you guys to have it back by 5. Meanwhile, Helmy and I, we left on time to come back to the hotel. But our GPS, as much as I love Boston, I actually want to move out there. It's built on top of each other. So your GPS, like mine hasn't been updated. And I didn't have Google Maps loaded on my phone yet. I kept saying we were in a pond. So we got ourselves into like the trouble that high school kids get when like their parents are away. But they were also, I guess, our main producer was happy because he said that we were very easy to handle because we just did as we were told, and you know, basically showed up sober. He said he worked on The Real Life with Paris Hilton, Nicole Richie, and he worked with Gary Busey, so he was very happy with us.
Well, yeah, when you're dealing with people who are, well, lack of a better term, crackhead.
Difficult.
Yeah.
He did say, I will put this disclaimer out, he did say Nicole Richie was a class act. He said he really liked Nicole.
Yeah, once she cleaned up, yeah, she was a hell of a lot better than she was, and that's a whole different conversation. But I think that Paris had a major influence on that because she was messed up. But when you're Paris Hilton,
yeah,
when you're Paris Hilton and you have the Hiltons behind you financially versus the Richies behind you financially, dancing on the ceiling only made so much. The Hiltons continue to make money. But, no, and that's, you know, and we've talked about it before, but Dennis had never been involved in that conversation. With the way that your guys' production was structured, as far as what you'd have to do, evidence review and all that, and actually time on site, you know, you watch Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, Paranormal State, like, you know, and any of those guys, they have time. You guys didn't have adequate time to do it the way that you wanted to do it. It was like, here, you got 6 hours, make it happen.
Yeah, you know, I know for a fact, you know, and I'm glad, you know, I'm kind of envious. Ghost Adventures gets 2 or 3 days on site. You know, the reason we don't have a reveal or evidence reveal is because our reviewing was done, you know, our reviews were done on the road, you know. Nobody wants to see me listen to EVPs, you know, from the night before in my, like, sweats in an SUV. But you know what, though? We were prepared for that, and I think it's a testament, actually, to everybody. Like, no matter how tired we were, we knew if we had to get it done, we got it done. Helmy and Jordan and I, we cracked up as EVPs. And, you know, our strategy was this. I mean, the device we use, yeah, it's staticky. So we would actually all not even confer with each other at first. We'd all bring our EVP list of what we heard together, and we'd match the ones that all three of us heard. And I know I was – Jordan and I were prepared for it just because – and so was Helmy, because we actually talked beforehand. Because when we were doing that web series, Resident Undead, you know, for time purposes, post-production, we would have anchor scenes that we were filming. I mean, I don't want to say scene, but we would focus on 3 or 4 points of the investigation and get those done beforehand, before anything. And, you know, kind of transitioning that style to TV was easy for us because we understood, we went into each location saying, we're going to hit these spots. And obviously things come up, you have to adjust. But at the end of the day, we all knew where we needed to go, what we were looking for. So, I will say great, you know, things about Ping Pong Productions. They, you know, the first thing our producer said to us, Dave, he goes, listen, guys, he goes, my job is post-production and produce on the ground. I'm not into the paranormal. You guys do what you do. If we get in your way, tell us. And, they really listened to us. I mean, as far as cameramen and stuff, we rarely, you know, we only had one at the most with each group. That's why we split up 2 and 2 usually, or an audio guy. I mean, towards the end of it, they trusted all of us enough with the cameras and everything to just kind of go on our own, and they were just kind of in one area if we needed something. So I was fortunate enough to have the experience of kind of like working on that web series, which, you know, everybody has a web series nowadays, but we were producing in a style that would, I guess, get us ready for television if it hit. So it was hard, you know, and it was definitely different, you know. It kind of sucked when you have 45 minutes at one place, but the thing that I noticed is that every time there was something like that happened, production would have a meeting, and next time those mistakes wouldn't happen again. So towards the end of it, it was nice. We had enough time to go what we needed done.
Now, that, from what, you know, with all the people that we've spoken with that have had their own shows previously or still currently have them or, you know, whatever, it always seems that production is our biggest complaint, you know.
Not for this one, you know. I will say that Paranormal Challenge was extremely frustrating with production. I mean, Chris, how many sound guys can you have to one person? That was just Paranormal Challenge. I liked the concept, but the execution, it was flawed, and I can, you know, ultimately say that. Like, it's a cool idea to have motion-centered IR, like, cameras everywhere, but it's not a great idea when you have four of them in a small room smashing IR everywhere in the middle of it, you know? Things like that. Now, we had 4 hours at Rolling Hills, and I love that place. I'm going back down in August. Wish I had more. But from everything I've experienced, you know, I mean, Sci-Fi School Spirits is a whole different thing. That was a testimonial. And, you know, at least for Haunted Encounters, I will say they're ping pong. You know, they do Bigfoot, Chasing UFOs, Destination Truth. I think they learned along the way that the best way to produce things is post-production and to kind of let the people do what they do. And I will say I think that's a testament to the team that they had, because we were all experienced. We weren't, you know, cast from, you know, casting call or something. They stressed that they wanted experienced ghost hunters on the ground, as they put it. I don't like the term ghost hunter, but that they wanted an experience, because that was their main goal, is to present it in a fashion that they know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's, you know, I watched some of the various ones, and you can always tell the ones that, well, I don't know what the hell happened to them. Look at, what is it, Deep South Paranormal. I saw like 3, 4, 5 episodes that vanished. You know, it kind of makes you wonder what, you know, is that a production issue, or are they just kind of, you know, flooding the market right now with all these various programs?
The market is oversaturated. I mean, just from a pure business aspect on the back end, you know, Deep South, I haven't watched it. I mean, in all reality, I'll be honest with you, the only paranormal show I really watch anymore is Paranormal State, if it's on. Because I'm trying, you know, I have some friends on there that, you know, I enjoyed what they do. They were actually, I think, pioneers in the field. And, you know, because TLC's debuting Cajun Paranormal, you know, but I understand it's Duck Dynasty meets Ghost Hunting. On paper, it looks great. And most of the deals out there, there are a lot of pilots. Like, you know, I think Ghostland Tennessee, those guys, I kind of feel bad for them because they have a pilot that they've just been re-airing on every single affiliate Discover or Animal Planet has. And they're nice guys, you know, they're really nice guys, and I hope they get picked up for a full season. But a lot of these companies, I guess, want pilots, and when we found out that we were going to get the term that we got with the first season with five episodes guaranteed, that was a blessing, because that does not move like that usually. Usually you get stuck in developmental holding, and then they do a pilot, then they have to shop the pilot. I think that's more of a testament to Ping Pong's reputation than anything. But the only problem with that, though, is, you know, when you do a 6-episode first season and they get picked up again, you got to wait longer, and people kind of forget. Like, Stranded was obviously, I think, probably a hit. I mean, it was, you know, Josh Gates honestly just ripped off MTV's Fear, which was a really good show back in the day. But people want more episodes, and guess what? They have to wait another 8 months for them because they weren't ready to do it, and the production crews are working on other projects ahead of contract. And so the only disadvantage to this is that, you know, you had that huge lull between, because networks are so scared to, you know, greenlight it. Then when they're like, oh, well, people like this show, guess what? The production company they're contracted with is already working on a different show. They don't have the same crew again.
Yeah. I definitely like Stranded. I'd laugh several times till I thought I would have to go put on a Depends or something.
MTV Fear was the second highest rated show MTV had behind The Real World every season. It just, from what I understand, got too expensive to make. But it was a genius show, if you think about it. I mean, it was almost like Paranormal Challenge, except Paranormal Challenge did the dumbest thing ever, saying there was going to be a winner and a loser, when in all reality, I mean, you know, people are like, you won Paranormal Challenge. I'm like, yeah, I walked away with the ultimate bragging rights. Nobody really wins or loses. Everybody did their thing, and we had fun.
Yeah. And, Dennis, how many times were we having Laugh Riot text message stuff between the episodes on Stranded? And it was pretty much every show. And, Daniel, if you watch Stranded, the one show that
saw the one with the doll head, I like that.
Oh, okay. Well, they had one that Dennis and I were losing our minds over, and I mean, it was like the phones were never shutting up. It was just text, and then we finally called each other during it because there was no point in watching anymore. So, Dennis, what was that place in Canada where they were?
I do not remember the name of the hotel. massive hotel, gorgeous place. They had, I think it was a husband and wife and like her brother or just a friend. The place where the cat kept showing up.
Yeah.
And just absolutely scared the living shit out of them. And I'm busting up laughing every time this cat shows up. And you can see the cat when they, you know, haul ass out of that area. And you can see the cat just kind of looking towards the door like, yeah, that's right, asshole. This is my place. He's like, that is awesome.
Well, here's, all right. Here was my problem with it, and this was part of the text feed that lasted for a half hour. I think it was either the first or the second night that they were there. They know where the haunted rooms are, but they all huddle into one. It's like, oh, well, we're going to stay in the same room. No, you know what? Put my ass in the most haunted room, and Dennis and I are going to be fighting over it.
Yeah.
We're going to run all of our shit and see what comes out. Secondly, what was funny about it, they were getting ready for bed, and then it, like, the hotel was kind of like a horseshoe shape. Directly across from the room that they were staying in, the hotel is completely vacant. And I completely agree. It's, like, one of the most gorgeous places that you, like, if you think rustic mountain hotel, this is the one that would come to mind of, like, perfection. So they're sitting there, they're getting ready for bed, and a light in a different wing pops on, and the dude's like, well, we'll check it out tomorrow.
Like, oh, dude, no, you gotta go check it out now.
What? Yeah. Like, hold on, let's back up a second. Something just happened, and that's the whole point and the focus that you're there for. And, let's get some shut-eye. We're tired. It was a long trip. No.
And I'm thinking the whole way that we're running down the hallway, how many times can I trip Matt so I can get there first? But, yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, and then the fans kicked on in the swimming pool. And, you know, scared the hell out of him. I thought, I mean, the one boy, I think, actually busted his leg open trying to get the hell out of the pool running like hell. I'm like, okay, well, I'd be back there searching. Where's the timer? Where's the switch? How's this shit come on? No, they're hauling ass. But what are you doing?
You know, I think so. I'm sorry?
No, I was just going to say that's just after he pooped himself. But, so that was.
I think that's what he slipped on.
You know, I think though for that show, I think that's a good formula because they did want like kind of somebody that was skeptical, and you know that's a word I think that gets abused too often. I think everybody has to be skeptical to be able to do this because you have to be able to, like you said, go see what's actually going on before jumping to a conclusion. But you know, for that show, I felt bad because you know, I'm on Facebook and stuff, and a lot of these people took a lot of heat, and unfortunately, a lot of them responded, which is a no-no in my book. But, you know, things like that, I mean, even on Paranormal Challenge, they wanted that shock moment, you know? And I'll be blunt, because my contract with them expired last year, I still have my reservations about some of the things that happened, because they just seemed too convenient. And I'm not calling anybody out on that. I don't think the host knew at all. I don't think anybody that was actually, like, talent-wise knew. But, you know, the one thing we all got suspicious of, you know, because a lot of us on the show talked about it, and, you know, it's one of the things you don't want to believe, but so many things looking back in retrospect were so convenient as far as getting scared. Now, with Ping Pong, I can tell you for a fact that, you know, from what I understand with them, that production, like I said, and I'm friends with some of the people on Facebook on production that were actually, you know, shooting that. And I would see their updates, and they would be like, well, about to see here for another 8 hours. I'm bored, because they really weren't going in there at all for, like, days. I thought it would be more interesting if they did a social experiment and actually, put them in there for a week with, like, rations of food just to see what happens, like that prison experiment that went wrong. But I don't think they could probably get sued over that, though.
Now, the prison experiment that went wrong, you're talking about the psychological prison experiment that One of the universities did it.
Yeah, university did it. They placed people as guards and prisoners, and they had to stop it because it got so out of control. People got so obsessed with this power control. I don't know. I think that's interesting to see what people do under pressure. But that's just me, obviously. Like I said, they don't want to get sued. But and speaking of Deep South, you know, that's another thing I saw. You know, whenever I see a group get a show, you know, I have an opportunity to showcase what they're doing. Yeah, I'm legitimately happy. That new show on Sci-Fi, Killer Contact, that's by Pilgrim. I was actually called in for that, but fortunately, I'm actually happy where I'm at. I was with Haunted Encounters at that point, but that's going to replace Ghost Hunters International, from what I understand. No, a couple of those people on there, I'm happy to see them on because they were, you know, they did the Paranormal Challenge. They've been kind of doing their thing. And, you know, it's one thing I never understand. I don't participate in it, but, like, Deep South guys, man, I saw them all the time on Facebook arguing with people. I'm like, man, just let it go. You know, there's no need to respond to stuff, in my opinion, at least. You know, I look in the mirror. I know what I am. I know where I've been. And at the end of the day, that's all I need. I just, you know, that's the only thing about TV that kind of gets me. There's so much, it's like kind of like the rap game, I always said. When I got into the paranormal stuff, I'm like, man, people are like, you don't really network with a lot of people. I'm like, yeah, half the people are crazy out there. You know, like, I don't need that, you know.
Yeah, well, people are crazy. Boy, there's an understatement.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, what's next? Are we going to see paranormal drive-bys? Like, you know, I'm very selective with events I do just because, you know, it's just I love doing them, but I want to do it for the right reasons. And I work with John Crescito with Beyond Ghosts all the time in the Northeast just because he's a great promoter, and he focuses on lesser-known places with a small intimate group so people can actually, like, you know, do paranormal investigations, not have, you know, he's not trying to make a quick buck with 50 people in the house, you know, which I really respect about him. And, you know, a lot of, some of my friends that I'm good friends with are like, oh, man, they're saying this about you. They're saying that. What do you say? I'm like, let them. I'm like, you know, people are dumb enough to believe rumors about me. I said, I don't even care to know them at that point. I'm like, I'm just, you know, too old for this shit. Stuff. I'm sorry.
Oh, trust me.
Obviously,
yeah.
You can swear on this show.
Yeah. Yeah, you've never listened to Into the Darkness Radio, apparently, because the other week Scott Grunewald had made a statement on his status that, you know, he really screwed up and he felt bad. I messaged him. I said, no, all right, what the hell did you do now? He goes, man, I said faggot on the radio program, and now I really feel bad. And I said, oh, you think that's bad? Come on in here and listen. And he stepped in, and as soon as he stepped in, poor Matt had no clue what was coming. And as soon as he stepped in the chat, I said, oh, hey, look who just joined us. It's that sperm herping faggot. And all you see is Scott just runs all the way across screen with ha-ha-has. And Matt shoots me a message going, what the hell is wrong with you? I had to copy and paste the chat back to him. I'm like, yeah, this show you can, yeah. This is the unrated version.
But
yeah, Monday and Wednesday nights, it's a free for all. That's why it's full spectrum. If in fact, because I do know and I do get messages from when certain people are going to be on, and I know tonight is one of them. But trust me, in the household, they've heard worse than this. If it's a family member or something like that's going to be listening in, and the grandkids, not my grandkids, obviously, because I'm not that damn old, but if the grandkids are listening in and all that stuff, then yeah, I'll let Dennis know or stuff like that. But normally it's, you know, Into the Darkness, full spectrum style after dark, or full spectrum after dark.
TVMA.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is, you know, we really should have a disclaimer.
We actually, for a little bit on the road, the rumor was, and I was kind of excited about this, but I think it was smart that they didn't go through with it. There was a rumor floating around that we were positioned to be a first TVMA paranormal show. I mean, they got it on TV14. But I was kind of excited about that almost because I thought that would be a lot more alluring, because not because of what we did, but almost because of, you know, two things. The reenactments were absolutely, like, watching them film those reenactments were crazy. Like, I've never seen anything so violent. And, you know, the whole, I guess there was some internal discussion about the fact we were reenacting murders. But luckily we're horrendous actors, so they took it down to TV-14. That's honestly the only thing that irked me about post-production is that they didn't understand, I think. You know, when the show came on, I actually got emailed, and I didn't respond. I just kind of shook my head and just was ashamed of a lot of people for not thinking. But somebody emailed me like, you know that Lizzie Borden killed her father. Your reenactment was wrong. And I was like, well, no shit. That's the whole point of it. You know, a lot. And I don't blame viewers, though. I blame post-production for that because they were confused when I said that we were going to reenact key moments but change the ending. The best way I explained it was like, you know, if somebody said your last name wrong, they're going to correct you. Or, you know, like one of my favorite memories as a kid, man, I hit a home run in baseball. I suck at baseball. I'm the worst baseball player in the world. Like, I was that kid that was a catcher if somebody got injured. But I hit a home run. You know, I was very proud of myself. I was very proud of luck. I believed in super luck. I shouldn't have done it. But if somebody went back to that moment and presented an alternate reality in which I struck out, I'd say something. I just thought it was, I called it intentional discourse almost, you know, intentional, you know, and that's the one thing I wish they would have explained because, you know, the silent theater, I think the most powerful line in the whole thing was after we reenacted one murder, I say, you don't even know your boyfriend paid me to do this. This man got shot by what he thought was an armed robber, but after he died and the police got involved, it came out that his boyfriend had actually hired a contract killer so he could, you know, inherit his fortune. So I wish I would have explained that better because it's like, you know, I didn't invent Halloween, you know, and, you know, people are like, you know, Ghost Lab. I'm like, yeah, I know Ghost Lab. That's kind of Eric here. That's what they did. It was cool. I wish they would have explained that better because that was the whole gimmick to the Ripple in Time was changing the ending, which to my knowledge, has not been done before, at least on television. You know, I was very proud of the fact that I was able to take that from YouTube and keep that creative input there. And that's how we got a lot of the EVPs. People were like, oh, man, you know Lizzie Borden killed her father. I'm like, yeah, I know. And that's why we reenacted it where her father killed her because in my opinion, and this is just my opinion because there's so many stories out there, I really don't believe that she was anything. I don't believe she was, you know, sexually abused or molested. I believe she was just a really nasty girl and they killed her father because she was being a bitch. I was surprised they didn't use that soundbite because that's what I said. You know, I have no compassion for her. You know, we seem to kind of view her as an anti-hero in America now when all reality was she was a killer, you know?
Well, and this is definitely something that I don't think the show portrayed the way that it should have been done. And I've you've seen the BS kind of like, you know, hate mail, like, you know, stuff about it or whatever. So the theory of Ripple in Time, which I've tried to, and we've talked about it as far as what your justification is, but when I explain it, it's not from the horse's mouth, so it's like, oh, well, it's an interpretation at that point. But truthfully, if you look at, is that, you know, everybody's like, oh, no, that's the Shanghai effect. Well, it's not. It's not.
It's
combined with it, but it's not exactly that. And when I sit there and I try and explain to people, they're like, well, you know, maybe you're just not explaining it right. I'm like, no, I understand exactly what they were going for. I'm telling you what it is from talking to them. So
yeah, and I don't, you know, as much as it's frustrating me, I don't blame you because they never explained it. Like, there's still a soundbite where I say we're going to change history, but they never explained it. And that bothered me because, you know, that's something, and it's hard to explain sometimes, but it's, you present an alternate reality in which something didn't happen. You take a proud moment away from somebody. And so these killers, these incidents that a lot of these hauntings are based off of, they were very proud of them. Like, Black Dahlia was actually not very active for us until we did that scene where the cops busted in and stopped the murder. That's when we got the I Killed Elizabeth EVP, which is what we were going for from the beginning. So, you know, I can understand where viewers got confused because some of my friends didn't understand either. I'm like, you know, I don't know how hard it is for Post to put in something saying a ripple in time. I don't know how many times I get in the subway. A ripple in time is where we take a key event, but we twist the ending to get the spirit to speak to us and let us know that that's not how it happened. So we're trying to get the truth out of providing misinformation. I said that soundbite a million times and never used it, which is sad because I think, you know, in retrospect, people will get it. And I don't think anybody's done it on TV before. But I don't know. You know, I don't teach their own. I don't always use that. You know, I thought the captain was probably the star of the show, and what Helmy has done with him is crazy. And then Helmy, though, you know, his custom-made pair line that he has out there. I mean, the show was very different, which I think, you know, might have rubbed people the wrong way. Because I can understand, if you think we're doing reenactments, they weren't done that well. But when you think about what the point of it was, you know, there was a point to it. It wasn't just playing Halloween. I didn't invent Halloween, you know.
Well, and yeah, and the truth of the matter is, when you guys were doing the Ripple in Time stuff, is you were doing a reenactment, but the truth, at least out of that, is almost like an alternate ending, in a way.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. No, you're 100% correct. We would literally put a Ripple in Time. You know, I guess that's where the name came from when I developed it. You present an alternate ending to a true event to get the spirits to speak. Because if I'm dead, for the, are you here? What's your name? I don't care. You know, I've had somebody in here last night, the night before. Maybe I'll give you a get out just to get some peace. But somebody came in and they showed me a deal where, you know, I didn't hit a home run, or, you know, they interrupted me when I was going to get married or something. Yeah, hell yeah, I'd speak up because I'd be pissed. So it was almost a very condescending form of provocation, just done a little bit differently.
Yeah, no, yeah. You know, it would have been great for production to, you know, have left that soundbite in so we actually understood, you know, what the goal was. Now, I understood what the goal was simply because, you know, I followed the show enough.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are some that did not understand the purpose of the alternate ending to it. It was simply to piss off the spirit that was most involved in that.
Yeah.
You know, the I keep wanting to, what was it, the prostitute.
The Hotel Cecil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea was to piss off the spirit and make him, you know, give some evidence that that's not how this shit went down.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you take this guy that got off on killing hookers, and it was funny, though. I forgot that I was supposed to leave the room when I got pushed. That's enjoying it. And she kicked me hard in my ribs, too. Get out of there. I forgot.
returning the money, the other one where, you know, you return the money on the
grave robbery.
Crap. Yeah. Like, I understood what the hell the purpose was. I don't see why so many people raise so much stink about it, going, well, you know, I don't understand it. Well, you don't understand it because you obviously don't follow it well enough to catch on.
And, you know, production could have done better with that. I mean, it's the only complaint I have, but the whole, like, the way the show was set up, that's what the whole, like, structure was, that they would do a professional reenactment and then show us changing the ending of the reenactment. So, you know, my favorite one was actually Eastern State, just because, you know, perhaps I'm kind of a sicko when I like this stuff, but just watching that episode, that's actually my favorite one. Having Jordan and Helmy just in bags over their head walking down a cell block, like, to me, that was creepy. That was cool. And another cool little Easter egg on that episode, you know, the Eastern State, when they did the actual professional reenactments at the beginning where they had the prison riot and all that stuff. That's actually our good friend from Pennhurst Paranormal. They actually own and operate Pennhurst, and they were able to come down for today and get in, and they were actually the people getting shanked and everything. They own Pennhurst.
Hmm. Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah. Which I'm actually going down there this weekend, down to Pennhurst. Love those people. Our good friend actually moving out west. So we're having a big – he's a paranormal investigator, and we're having a big going-away party/investigation for him down there this weekend.
Yeah, Pennhurst isn't all that far from me. I mean, I'm just down the road in Richmond, so.
Oh, okay.
I think Pennhurst is only 4, maybe 5 hours away.
Pennhurst is, I don't frequent locations a lot, and when I first got into the paranormal, I did watch some of the other shows just kind of get a feel for it, and I went to the places they had on there and had different experiences, sometimes the same, but Pennhurst, I think, is one of the most active locations, just because it's very fresh when you think about it. They just opened up for public ghost hunts in 2011, so it's pretty fresh, because when we went down there to Resident Undead for the web series, Up until then, I believe, it was only certain groups that knew the ownership and, you know, TAPS and all them were there. But, I mean, Pennhurst is a whole campus. And what I enjoy about Pennhurst is not only the people there, Pennhurst Paranormal, they're some of the nicest people I've ever met. It's my hometown, too, which is kind of ironic. I never got to go there in high school because it's closed. But, you know, all the money they take in for overnights goes into those, you know, goes into the property because slowly but surely they're trying to abate each building on the campus so they can open up the whole campus. So they are in it, I think, for the right reasons, where their whole goal is to just kind of they have their tagline is Rediscover Pennhurst. They're really there. They love the place. So it's interesting going hunting, going investigating with them because, you know, just their knowledge alone from being there on a regular basis. So if you ever get a chance, man, Pennhurst is absolutely great place. And it's a lot of sadness, I will say. You know, it breaks my heart because my little brother, I think, you know, back in the 70s or whatever, would have ended up there if he was born in that time because he had some special needs. But because we have programs like Head Start and the smaller classrooms and life skills, he actually graduated functioning higher than most people. He transitioned from, like, life skills into regular, not regular, but into your standard high school population and excelled. You know, back when Pennhurst was operating, he probably wouldn't have, he probably would have been just left on the mat there. And it's a sad place more than anything.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of them like that. There's one here in the western side of Virginia that, you know, it was also, and it's got to be just loaded with nothing but sadness and their sorrow. I mean, when you think about what occurred in them, and I mean, I can't think of any positive energy that could possibly be floating in any of those locations.
And yeah.
Now there is one, and I was kind of dumbfounded and saddened to see it. Norwich Insane Asylum, which was up in Norwich, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
It had, and I did a little bit of research on it, and I'm not sure if anybody's ever actually done a investigation there, be it a, you know, TV program or not. If so, I've never seen one. But I went by there. My daughter actually, daughter and son-in-law are right down the road in Groton. So we passed right by it to go to Mohegan Sun Casino. Massive location. And, I mean, just the, you know, obviously, like most of the insane asylums and whatnot, it has its own cemetery on the property, and, you know,
it was almost like a functioning compound.
Yeah. I mean, it had everything to be self-sufficient. The saddest thing is they tore the buildings down without having any, you know, any paranormal activity at all as far as trying to release the spirits or anything. They just yanked the buildings down. I mean, all that energy and all the spirits and so forth that are there, what the hell happens with them? Do they just stay on the land? You know, what's your take on it? I mean, should they have done something to, you know, maybe send in a well-known psychic or medium, something?
You know, I'm not sure where I stand on that. I think, I mean, it makes me angry just for the fact that there's so many locations out there that don't have the proper funding behind them that you know, in many cases it's under private ownership because a state does not view something like that as a historical landmark just because the history of it's negative. So I think that this very sad habit I see of history being torn down in lieu of parking lots or shopping malls, I think that, you know, I mean, I don't know in that case, you know, I don't know what to do as far as the spiritual side of it. Because a lot of famous serial killer houses, not serial, but the famous murder houses are torn down. The O.J. Simpson house was actually torn down and rebuilt on. So I think that in that case, you know, at least from the way I look at things, it would be almost as if they would not know it was a different place. You know, I'm very big on the dimension theories and the idea of energy, almost more of a astronomical, you know, astronomy perspective, I guess you could say, with EMF fields that are actually around the Earth and things like that. But I do think as far as, you know, but then you have residual, which kind of cancels out half my belief. So I think at the very least they should have somebody go in there or something, but it's to a point where, unfortunately, these properties, you know, private ownership struggle to fund it, and the state doesn't want to get involved. You know, I'll be honest with you, there's been a couple times when I've had the offer to do some things for free at places, and I'll still put down some money just because I know that it's going towards preserving the place, you know? Just the way I operate, because I think it's sad. You know, Jordan and I and Helmy, we really get sad. We actually passed a big compound in New York when we were going from Massachusetts to New York. We were driving down there, and we were on the, you know, Suburban, and our production manager, we called him to stop, we wanted to look at this place. It was this huge, 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 like old schoolhouse compound like Penhurst, and the thing we saw was a big sign for private property owned by, I forget what the company was, property construction, you know, and it's like construction. That stuff, man, that's just, it's not right. And I'm not saying they should keep open for haunted attractions, but they should at least leave some sort of standing monument there, or you know, how much would a little plaque on a tree or a stone cost the state? You know, $100?
Definitely.
To just remind people what happened.
Yeah, just the, you know, the tragedies that occurred there. Now, I've got one other real quick one. I know Matt's got something to talk about. I've got one that regards the same exact thing that we're talking about. I do construction for a living.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working at a location up in D.C. It was St. Elizabeth's Hospital in its origin. The first building began construction in 1855, opened the first building in 1857. There are 138 acres on the whole compound by the time all was done. It was the first federal insane asylum. In its prime, it carried 8,000 patients and 7,000 staff. Now, I've been doing paranormal investigations and everything several years. I've never seen a full-bodied apparition. I'm working on Christmas Eve about 2:30 in the afternoon. There's me and one other person in the building, and he was with my crew, so I could see him on the backside of the room I was in. I'm on my hands and knees looking at floor tile, and I hear hard-soled shoes coming down the stairs just outside the door, 5 feet in front of me. Oh, that's odd. You know, I know now this thing is being rehabbed to be put to use by Department of Homeland Security. Now, I know they have 24/7 armed guards that patrol the property and the buildings and everything else. And I'm thinking, that's kind of odd. You know, usually a security officer is going to have a soft-soled shoe so he can run if he needs to, not a hard sole. This sounds like a dress shoe.
Yeah.
But then I see this guy walk by me in a black suit, carrying a black briefcase, wearing a fedora. I'm like, well, who the fuck was that? And as soon as he got by the door, just past that doorway is the door to the outside. And I couldn't have been but 3 paces behind him. I popped through that door and I look around, and it's 50 feet in any given direction to get out of sight. And there wasn't a person around that I could see at that point. I'm like, okay, now I know this case has got some, I mean, I definitely felt the energy there anyway. I constantly felt that I was being looked at. A couple of times I could hear some whispers that were like right at me. So I knew there was energy there. I mean, there had to be. They are going to turn this into offices and a kitchen and a dining hall and everything for Department of Homeland Security. And I'm just trying to picture some of the reports that are going to be generated by security there. The best story that I was told from that location, the absolute best story, the superintendent tells me that he was going up to check on 3 electricians that were in such and such building. He's got a sheetrock crew that needs to come through right behind them. He said, I got about 30, 40 feet away from the front door of the building. And these three electricians come hauling ass out. He said, there's like six steps, and I don't think they touched but one on the way down. He said, all three of them are pale as sheets, scared shitless, and they're hollering, you need to get security in here. There's someone in the building. So he goes ahead and radios security and says, you need to get the hell over here. And he says, as I'm, you know, after I hollered for security, I asked the electrician what the hell happened. They've got an apprentice with them that's, you know, 20, 21 years old maybe. He said, this kid is shaking like he just dodged bullets. All three of them are sweating now. And this is old time of year. I mean, I'm wearing a heavy coat. And he said, what the hell just happened? This man, we were up on the second floor. We're putting the boxes in the wall down the corridor where we need them. And we all three heard a scream, turned and looked, and we see this woman running at us barefoot in a nightgown, yanking hair out by the clumps. She's like, what? They're like, dude, there's somebody in the damn building. Well, security goes through room by room, closet, door, everything. Nobody. He said the three electricians went through with security just so they could get back to their tools. They packed their shit and left. He said, I ain't seen them back on the job yet.
I don't blame them. I mean, I'll tell you what, I've been doing this since about 2010. I've seen one full body. Obviously, the first thing all three of us saw, it was in Trans-Allegheny, it was a couple of years ago, Jordan and myself and our friend, one from Adam, were there. We all turned the corner, we see a guy, like blue almost, huddled over in this room, and we all freeze. And to me, that smashes a certain reality I don't want to smash. It doesn't know, people are like, well, don't you want to see that? Isn't that the Holy Grail? I said, not for me. I said, for me, knowing how the world operates energy-wise, for audio to appear out in air, that's enough validation. I've had, you know, my personal experiences where I've been felt touched. I remember Penrith, my scarf started getting pulled, like somebody was trying to pull it down. And, you know, first thing I do, obviously, is look around for windows. Because I'm like, okay, maybe light came in. I'm trying to, like, gain my composure. I realize, dude, this part of the wing in Trans-Allegheny, it's all cells. There's no windows. There's no windows on purpose in this one cell. And, you know, it's funny because when people, I'm sure you've had this, people come to you and they're like, don't they come crazy? And I laughed because on our show, actually, that happened at Lizzie Borden and Houghton Mansion, I'll be honest with you, I was very hesitant to do Lizzie Borden because I didn't think it was going to be active. I said, you know, people pay to have an experience there. Whether or not they have it, they want it, they get it, they leave with a story. That's what Lizzie Borden's turned into, a museum or a bed and breakfast, which is what it is. And, well, I was wrong. I mean, it was active, but I remember our producer, when we got the EVP hatchet, she started crying and just started saying, no, no. And this is somebody that's worked on all these shows. She goes, I've never seen it. And she just booked out of there crying. And we actually were taking a quick break, like around 6 or 7, and our one cameraman, Doug, came out. And he was just getting some B-roll. And like the security guards, man, he was shaking. He was pale. And he said, I'm not going back in there. He said that he was getting some B-roll, and he kept hearing footsteps, and he looked behind him real quick because he had to tell them to be quiet real quick. And there was, he could see somebody pacing back and forth underneath the door. He could see the feet, and he opened it, and there was nobody there, and that's when he just ran. He refused to go in there the rest of the night. And now our main producer, Dave, right, he was an open-minded guy, but he even said, he goes, you know what, guys, I don't know if we're dealing with ghosts. He goes, unless I see something in my face, I'm not going to really get too jumpy. But we were at the Howden Mansion, and we hear footsteps, and he radios up, and he goes, hey, Bree, or those other producers, he goes, Bree, quit walking around. We got to get this. We're doing an EVP session out here, and then we hear Bree, what are you talking about? He turns around, she's right behind him with the rest with our second group. Could be always been the two groups, and then we all just start like walking up like at the ceiling, and the footsteps keep going. He goes, he looks, he goes, all right. All right, you guys are on to something here. And that's actually when we got that. Jordan and I heard a gunshot almost from the same area where Mr. Witters would have shot himself with a horse gun at the barn. And the coolest thing is, for me, is that when that episode aired, I actually, the main Ghost Hunters group, I met them recently in New York at a convention. They actually tweeted me, and they said, hey, we got the same thing. So I messaged them back, and we ended up kind of trading evidence, and they got the same gunshot that we got almost. So, you know, it always, I kind of think we all, as paranormal people, get a sick pleasure when we see
normal folk getting shaken up because it's just funny. And they're like, oh, don't think we're crazy. Don't think we're crazy. Like, no, no. I know. It's okay.
I mean, it fascinates the hell out of me.
You know, and going back to, sorry, Dennis, go ahead.
No, I was telling you to go ahead. You had something that you wanted to kick in.
Well, I always have something I want to kick in. You know that. But,
yeah, never does.
So, and going back to what you were talking about as far as the, like, Lizzie Borden and even if you've been to the Ferrer School and all that, you know, all the main places where they always host Paracons.
Mm-hmm.
How much
going there
actually...
in July for the first time?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's actually going to be the only convention this year. Because, I mean, Helmy's in Utah, Jordan's in California, I'm out here in, you know, Pittsburgh. It's going to be the only one we're all at. We're out there. They actually they contacted us, and they wanted to host kind of like a cast thing there. So we're all going to be there in July. Quick plug, Iowa Paracon 2013 at the Ferrer School, hosted by Seth Allen and CCPI. Quick plug. There we go.
And there it is with his jazz radio voice.
I actually had a radio show in college for 4 years. Had some cool people. I had Nick Foley and Ron Jeremy. They were my two big stars I had in 4 years there.
You know, I actually met Ron Jeremy at Saddle Ranch on Sunset in L.A.
Interesting guy. Educated guy. Very interesting,
yeah.
Though. Very quiet.
Yes, he's not just Mr. Big Dick. He actually does have knowledge and personality.
Mm-hmm. Master's in education from Hofstra. I mean, he's smart enough to know that having sex to pay off student loans is probably more fun than working.
There is that, yes. But no, like, and I lost my train of thought. I had a funny story about Ryan.
You were thinking about the big dick.
No.
At the convention?
No. Dennis, there was a thing that Dennis and I had going on as far as who could leave the other speechless, and I happened to do it last show. So I think that was Dennis's failed attempt to try and leave me speechless. But no, I'm not a fan of the sausage. I am a vegetarian, to be honest. But God damn, Dennis, bring something up. Now I have to get back on my train.
Oh no, you were asking. I think you were going to ask about maybe how haunted they really are when there's conventions at these places.
Well, no, what I'm wondering is. And your experience in doing the events and stuff like that, how much do you actually think is suggestion versus actually something going on?
You know, that's a good question. And I struggle with that because here's the way I look at these conventions, okay? There's nice people paying to be there, but with that comes expectations for a personal experience or not. In my role, all I can do is now this is where I take pride in my work because, you know, this is ballsy in my opinion. You have groups that will do, say, a mel meter session, or we usually break it into different groups. They have mel meters or, you know, the ghost talk box or whatever it is. I straight up do live EVPs. That's my specialty. That's what I'm usually there to do. And you can, you know, one of the, I guess, best feedback I get from, you know, promoters and people that go there, guests, they leave me feedback that I ask for, that they enjoy it because I'm not there trying to prove the ghost exists. I'm there, I'm saying, listen, we're going to do some EVPs. It's not always a hit. And in my opinion, that means that it's legitimate because you're not always going to strike gold. But we are going to try. And I think sometimes there's, you know, personal experiences. Sometimes I see someone like whisper down, like, ooh, I feel like there's energy in here. Then 5 minutes later, somebody's possessed by the devil. But for me, all I can do is do the EVPs and make sure they have a good time and they feel like they got their money's worth. And I've succeeded in that because a lot of times we do get pretty interesting EVPs. I felt bad last time because I made a little girl cry because I was trying to get them to say their name, and it goes, I don't take orders. And we were at Fort William Henry in Lake George, and this one girl started just bawling. I felt bad, but, you know, I think she was there more of like a girlfriend role for somebody, and in that moment it got to her. So for me, I did an EVP, so I can feel good about myself knowing that, hey, you know, it might not just be an EMF spike. It might, you know, I have my reservations about like spirit boxes and all that stuff. I really do. The only other piece of equipment I really like to use a lot for concrete is called a haunted trigger object. It's made by the Ghost Detectives in Pennsylvania. It's so simple. It's genius. All it is it's a metal tray that's wired up to a sound indicator, and you put something like, you know, a soda can or quarters on there, and if something touches it, it triggers the electrical current to make off a sound. It's almost like a mousetrap. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. I've only seen it go off a few times. So, you know, these events, I think it's more, it's for the fans, and I hate to say that word, but, you know, it's for the people that want to be, you know, meet the people that see on TV. You know, that's why I do stuff with the Haunted Collector, so they come to see them, and then they have to see me while they wait for it. But, you know, they go there to have a good time. So as long as they leave feeling like they got their money's worth, that's all I'm concerned about. But I have made some people cry. I was doing some ghost hunting with some of the Walking Dead cast in Buffalo, or Niagara Falls, the Parahara, and they were cool guys. And I know I got one of them a little bit uneasy because we got EVP and said Walking Dead, and I was losing it, laughing, and there were people like gasping, like, "Oh my God, it said it." The one guy's like, "This is really a little bit uncomfortable right now."
No, you had cast of the Walking Dead on site, like for an investigation, or just in general, you were showing them stuff.
No, they stayed to do the investigation afterwards because they were advertised for that. They were really nice guys too. They were interested in the paranormal, and so like I know John Crescito Beyond Ghost, he hosts the para convention, a para horror convention every year, which I saw this year. After he did it last year, really took off in general. Because honestly, horror fans like myself, we're pretty hardcore. Last year at the first one, he probably had 2,000 or 3,000 people foot trafficking through. I mean, he had paranormal people there like myself, who at that time was promoting Sci-Fi School Spirits, but he brought in, you know, Tyler Mayne and Christine Carr and the Knight Rider Carr. So it was a huge success, but he always has the, like, kind of horror celebrities available during the ghost hunts, which is kind of cool for me, you know, because I can show them what I do. But for my EVPs, you know, the one thing I always preface it with for the people there, because I feel bad because I don't want them to feel like they're treated like kind of like a gimmick. I say, you know, I want you to know that there are people here that we're here to see you. We're here to show you some respect. We're actually here because of you. And I don't ever want them to feel like it's a parlor trick or redundant or insulting. I always let them know we're at the disadvantage. We need you to speak to us. We're here because that's all we can do. And I seem to get better results when I explain that to who's ever there saying, you know, we're here out of respect for you, and we're at a disadvantage because we're not on your level of energy. So that seems to really help results a lot. And because, I mean, I would feel bad if I was just in a place trying to get, like, you know, one-trick ponies off these, you know, spirits that obviously have a lot more behind them than saying one or two words for the crowd.
Well, and that's something I've always talked about. And I've done speeches at the stuff in Chicago. One thing, Dennis, yes, this is what I was initially talking about as far as when I had lost my train of thought for the second time. But, yes, this was the track that it was going on. Pittsburgh has a shit ton of paranormal history to it. I mean, like East Coast, way, way high. It doesn't matter from Florida to Maine.
Oh, I think Ohio is the most haunted state in America. Ohio is just ridiculous. Every block, there's like a super haunt.
Which doesn't make any sense to me because, like Minnesota, people in Ohio don't want to live in Ohio. No offense.
Exactly. I attributed a lot to Prohibition and slavery, the Underground Railroad trailing up through there. But no, that's funny, though. I don't meet too many proud Ohioans.
But, dude, look at Chicago. I mean, of the history of mafia and all that shit, like, of history. I mean, hell, back in the turn of the century, the And up and through the 30s, the shoreline of Chicago was 12 miles back from where it is now. That was all built up. That was all produced shoreline. So
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, 10 miles or 12 miles. But, yeah, it Chicago wasn't where it is now. Like with the Sears Tower, because I refuse to call it the Willis. John Hancock, like all that stuff. Yeah, that's on manufactured land. That's not actual where the shoreline was.
Hmm.
So, and if you look, it started to develop after the Great Chicago Fire at the turn of the century. But for all the stuff that's happened with all the mobsters, like, you know, everything.
The Valentine's Day Massacre, man.
Yeah. You know what that is now?
What's that?
That's a park that they don't let people in. They ripped down the facility. Dude, I swear to God, for historical paranormal research, it's the most shunned shit in the world. The one that we used to have all our events at, and, I mean, phenomenal, and even overnight investigations and stuff like that for, like, $10 people can come in was the Portage Theater. And Chicago shut it down. The owners are the sweetest people you'd ever meet. We were supposed to have the Chicago Paracon in October, but no, they shut it down due to a bullshit liquor license thing. And they want to charge the owners like $10,000 or something like that for their liquor license. They're like, well, we don't make that much anymore. Like,
yeah,
back in the heyday and everything, yeah, cool. But the city strong-armed them and turned it down because we had all these paranormal events there. It's so hush-hush and such bullshit around here. It honestly kind of makes me sick in a way.
You know, unfortunately, people have a tendency to shun what they fear instead of admitting to themselves, hey, you know, it sounds horrible, but there's money to be made to restore certain things. Like, in Ohio, I was actually managing a property called the Cowan Center. And it was, you know, it was a large community center, but, it, you know, I heard through a grapevine it was haunted, so I went there, and it was very active and in a weird way. And obviously, you know, you don't strike gold overnight, so I actually had some contacts in the local area that were, like, within a half an hour from there. I said, hey, listen, I talked to the owner. He's cool with it. He loves the paranormal stuff. You guys want to come out here and just verify that there is activity? I said, I don't need you to justify it. I said, just let me know if it is or not. If not, not a big deal. You don't strike gold every time. And they all got some interesting results, so we started doing paranormal tours there to fund the renovations that the place needed. And you know, I'm a marketer at heart, so the first thing I did was try to get it on TV, not to raise prices. I was very proud of the fact that after we did get it on TV, we kept the price the same, because I don't think it's right to jack things up just because you're on TV. But we got it on my ghost tour. Now, obviously, I was under contract at the time with Sci-Fi, so, you know, our friend that investigated, we actually, you know, talked to them, and they went ahead and did my ghost tour, which was cool to get them that exposure. And they have some great evidence. And after that, it blew up. But the problem with blowing up is that, you know, yeah, we were actually booking it 3 or 4 nights a week. But his main cash cow is a youth basketball league there. They basically pay his mortgage. And we were actually scheduling it perfectly. So when the basketball schedule, the last game was done, there was a half an hour break. And then they left. And during that half an hour, that's when we would open it up to the teams coming in and show them the room and everything. And it was, you know, I will say, it was a nice operation because, being a paranormal person myself, I made sure that when they came in, there was a coffee maker, there was food, you know, and it wasn't much money at all. My whole goal was to provide a place in the area that wasn't going to jack you up like Prospect Place or Hillview. My goal was to find a place where the owner was on the up and up, and he even said to me, he goes, you know, this amount of money you're throwing me, it's going to help. I don't want any more. It's great, because he didn't have to do anything. So it was a win-win. Until the basketball league got involved and said that they were going to stop coming there because the parents were very, I guess there was some, you know, very religious parents in the group, and they threatened to pull the whole league. So we had to shut down because I don't blame the owner. I mean, I can't take his steady mortgage payment away.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's still chill about it. Like he just said, you know, don't advertise. If you have friends in the area or if you're ever in the area, you're more than welcome to come in because he actually enjoys the paranormal. And it's a shame because right next door there's a German club called the Bessemer that is active. And there's actually, for the creepy factor, there's a hidden apartment there with swastikas all over it because it was built before a swastika was turned into a symbol of hate, but it was a good luck charm. And right across, there's an old thing called the B&O Railroad Station. I mean, it's like Monopoly, I guess. That's on the news every year for holding events. So we were trying to actually organize almost kind of like a ghost walk tour where everybody would win because, you know, Bessemer's only open until 8 o'clock at night. Calvin Center, you know, is open until 9 o'clock at night for basketball. And the B&O is, you know, open if you know the right people. It would have been a great deal for paranormal teams, but at the end of the day, like you said, local government gets involved, bureaucratic stuff, and instead of exploring the past, they just say, we don't want to talk about it, and especially in Chicago, man. That's crazy, because Chicago is one of the most important cities in American history.
Yeah, and the shit is so swept under the rug, it's not even funny. I mean, it's horrible. Like, for example, yesterday, Father's Day, we took our boat and we were hanging out in the playpen, you know, having fun, the Father's Day, you know, kind of stuff. And then we went up and down the Chicago River. Well, we passed the exact location that the Eastland capsized. And there was 873 deaths in the Chicago River. It was the second largest on a single body of water other than the Titanic. That was like, 1,274 people, I think, perished in that. Well, the Eastland capsized. It was like, you know, 12 feet from shore. And it was almost, you know, almost 900 deaths in that one. The Harpo Studios that Oprah operates out of was a makeshift hospital and morgue, along with a couple other buildings within that area. But when you go down there, there's a plaque, which I kid you not, is about the size of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of like printer paper that honors, you know, what happened. Well, you can't have 800 names on that.
Yeah.
So it's like, we're going to give them a little bit, but not too much. It's like, Edmund Fitzgerald, which I know everybody knows the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Right.
That was crew. That was what, like 20, 24, 26 people that
29.
Died on that? 29. Yes. Dennis is more up on the history of the Edmund than I am. And that's funny because he's, what are you, Dennis, 900 and some miles away?
Yeah, something like that. 943, I think, was what the odometer tripped.
Yeah.
But,
so
yeah, well, part of the reason that I'm up on the Edmund Fitzgerald is I've watched a few different shows on it. You know, obviously the old song, you know, kind of made me think of it. And I'm like, you know, I wonder what the hell the story behind it is. So I actually researched it. But it's got a lot more notoriety than, I mean, it's got a lot more notoriety than virtually any other of the Great Lakes shipwrecks. Now, the Great Lakes themselves, just massive numbers of vessels have gone down. But, you know, like you said, you can't put, you know, a plaque at every single location for every single person. But you would think one that, you know, went down right there in the heart of Chicago, they would have a damn plaque to memorialize the people.
It has something, you know, just something out of respect.
Yeah, I mean, at least a monument or, you know, something on the Chicago, it's great food, but terrible history. Recognition, terrible history, recognition, I should say.
Yeah.
But,
well,
you know, and,
I mean,
and
does
what
the
it
same
is.
Thing.
And, Dennis, I know you've talked to her before, and I know her. I love her absolutely to death. And, Daniel, I don't know if you know her or not or have encountered her as Ursula Bielski.
I have not, honestly.
She runs Chicago Haunted, or Chicago Haunts, which is a ghost tour. She has buses that run around
That'd
the city.
Cool
there. Yeah, no, and she has like 3 master's degrees in history, and like, trust me, if you want to know anything about Chicago history, Ursula is the one to ask. She was a guest host on Paranormal Challenge when they were in California. So she was working with that crew. Also, one of our dear, dear, dear friends, and I'm sure you've heard of this, is Jeff Mudgett, the H.H. Holmes.
H.H. Holmes, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of our dear, dear, dear friends. Well, that's two of the portions of her tour that are on her tour on every one is the Glass Factory and 63rd and Wallace, where the murder castle stood.
Oh.
So I've been working with Jeff since like the 3rd or 4th day after his book came out. And Ursula and I mean, she's, like, you want to talk about somebody, and not even just Chicago, just in general of history. She is ridiculously knowledgeable. She can probably tell you what happened in Boston on April 14th, 1913. I mean, it's like this woman's mind is absolutely, absolutely amazing. And one of the biggest sweethearts ever. So, yes, I'm going to do a quick plug. Chicago Haunts, and they also have, Dennis, correct me if I'm wrong, what is it, L.A. Haunts?
They've just teamed up to begin the L.A. Haunted Tours.
That would be cool.
Yeah. So they do one, and I talked to Jordan, and she hasn't gotten back to me yet. She's like, oh, well, my schedule's crazy. Because I told her, I'm like, hey, I have free VIP passes for you for L.A. Haunted Tours. She's like, well, I'll let you know. I'm like, yeah, let me know so I can let them know that you're coming.
Yeah, I actually haven't been in contact with her. I mean, here and there, but she's been running around. She's just been running around. I don't know who's out there in L.A. Too busy for me.
Yeah, she's out in the desert right now, I think.
Yeah, she's at Amarosa or whatever it is out there. I know it's not called that, so that's a rollback in Philadelphia, but.
Yeah, I'll stick to my small town. Richmond is plenty big for me. I have enough trouble with the assholes here that don't know how to drive. I'd hate to do it when there's 10 times as many.
Man. Yeah, I don't. I did enjoy that about the show, not having to drive anymore, especially in Los Angeles and New York. That was, okay with me.
Yeah, no. I spent enough time out in L.A. that I know when Jordan and I were talking, not tonight, but earlier, when I said, I'm like, you on the 405, the 101, or the 107? She's like, the 107. I'm like, yeah. I said, if you look at it, it's more like a urban kind of street, but it's classified as a highway. They yeah. And she told me the name of it. I know it is the 107. I don't remember the name of it. And she was talking about how she's, like, stuck on the 101. I'm like, well, why the hell are you writing me back? Like, no. Drive. Like, put your phone down and drive. Conversation can wait, you know?
Yeah.
I ride a motorcycle, and I know for a fact that dudes split lanes and women split lanes and shit in L.A., and it's legal, and I would too, to be honest, but No.
I did it when it wasn't legal. I did it in Ohio.
So, hey, well,
that was
Daniel, real quick.
I was on a bike.
Yeah, Daniel, real quick, if you want to throw any plugs or anything that you have going on, we got about 5.5 minutes left.
Yeah, best way to get a hold of me is usually on Twitter, but I've used it so much. So I'm at Daniel Hewitt on Twitter. Also, we do have the Iowa Paracon coming up for our school in July. I'll be honest with you, I'm not good with dates. My Google Calendar reminds me of anything. But if you actually just Google Iowa Paracon 2013, that will come up. And then in late August, I'm actually going to be at the Rolling Hills ParaQuest, hosted at Rolling Hills Asylum, obviously, by Sharon Coyle. It's a fundraiser, and with all proceeds actually go towards the renovations needed there. So I'll be there with George Lopez from Dead Air Paranormal, and I believe she's bringing in some other people that were on Paranormal Challenge there. And then there's something else I'm doing. I forget, honestly. I think those are two main things. And I think I might be up to something in September. My schedule gets murky after August, unfortunately. So if you want any information or just look at, you know, I have some pictures up. My website's updated. It's danielhuman.com. That's about it. I'm a boring guy. I just, those are the big things. If you get a chance to, Miss Utah was trending on Twitter today, so I think Helmy might have won an award. So make sure to tweet him congratulations on that.
Oh, nice. Well, first off, you're by far not a boring guy. secondly, I think the one in September you're talking about, the 8th, 9th, and 10th by Allenton. Or Allentown, I'm not sure which one.
I am actually there's actually a big one, and it's Terrorfest. That's actually not the one. There's one in New York the following week. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be at. I have to, I don't know the details on that with the people, but I'm actually not going to be at ParaQuest. I'm impressed, as somebody on the business side of things. I don't know how. I think if you are in the area, you should go. But I don't see it happening ever again because the budget they have is unbelievable. I don't know how the promoters are going to actually pay for anything. I mean, they have probably about $100,000 worth of talent there. So
yeah,
but good for them.
That's where myself and Dennis will be there. But apparently you're too good. No, I'm just kidding.
No. I there is a chance I will be there with the Pennhurst crew. We're helping them out with some things. It's, like I said, I think the majority of guests are actually vendors, but you never know. So, don't get me wrong. I mean, if I can go, I'll go in general because there's, pretty big names there. I might be there with the Pennhurst crew because I know they're going to have a table there, so I might get to hang with them for the day.
Well, if you need, and since it's kind of in your, I can't say backyard, but neighborhood, being the state of Pennsylvania, if it's something you want to go to, I talked to the guy who's hosting that whole thing, and for where it's left at is, it's kind of like an open invitation, basically, to, I know Sarah has a booth there. I know Brittany is going to be there, who normally hosts the show. And they're going to be working together and everything. So you got more than enough family to cover you. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's like a 99% chance that I will be there. And if you guys are there, even better. I just got to get Ernie Hudson to sign some stuff for me. I wanted to be a ghost person when I grew up. How crazy is that idea?
Oh, yeah. See, let's see how that goes over with the school psychiatrist.
Yeah,
oh, they
exactly.
Told me I was crazy. Oh, man. But, we'll meet up. I mean, even if I just stop by the Pennhurst guys or your booth or something, we'll definitely meet up there, grab something to eat.
Now, did
yeah,
you say
and...
you were going to Pennhurst this weekend?
Yes, I'll be there. I'm actually going home Friday. I'll be at Pennhurst Saturday, probably from like 8 a.m. till 4 in the morning. Then Sunday I leave for Scranton, Pennsylvania. Monday I got to be up in New York.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
Guess how far away I am from Pennhurst.
Way closer than me. Correct.
Yes. Don't be surprised if you see a tall, skinny, ugly SOB show up Saturday, Daniel, and hey, I'm CPR Dennis.
Fair enough.
We got 30 seconds left real quick. Thank you, Daniel. Dennis, thank you.
Hey, thank you guys a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always an honor. We've been talking for a while, so I definitely appreciate it.
Now, folks, make sure to look up Matt and myself, CPR Dennis, CPR Matt, both on Facebook, same on Twitter. Check out ChicagolandParanormalResearchers.com. Also check out Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers on Facebook. And with that, I believe we just went to archives.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
You did the same thing. Thanks so much for joining us, buddy.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was definitely a good show. You've got some great points, and I love some of his thoughts and theories.
Well, yeah, and that was the main thing with everybody who was on Haunted Encounters is they never really got their stuff across because of production, which is why we kept talking about production.
Yeah, I wonder how much, there was a decent length of conversation there about the program Stranded. I wonder how much, what I would love to do? I would love to get all of the static cam recordings. And, I could lock myself in my room for a month and just review those. Do you realize they had, a lot of times you'd see a screenshot from a camera and it would say, camera 63 or whatever, back gate, whatever in the hell. The number of cameras that they had was phenomenal. I would love to be able to just lock myself in a room for a month and just watch footage from, one of the places.
Here's the actual question, though. How many, because you can edit a screenshot and a video clip and all that. They may have had, 5-6 cameras because that's really all the angles that they showed. Maybe they went into 7-8. But they didn't show angles from 277, or however many cameras they had out there.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean,
it could have been camera 6, but it was labeled as the 447. It's like, wow, they really have that covered.
Yeah, that's possible. It's the Hollywood smoke and mirrors shit. Yeah, well, they definitely do some smoke and mirrors. But even if they only had, 6, 8, 10 cameras in the location, did anybody actually review those cameras and go, meanwhile, while the visitors or, whatever, were over in such and such, our cameras captured this going on over here, Did anybody ever actually review?
But the team never, just grabbed their shit and said, hey, it's time. It was always
just run like hell?
Yeah, well, we'll check it out tomorrow.
I
know there's stuff going on now, but I'm tired. No.
Yeah, but you also have to understand, those weren't actual paranormal investigators. Those were just people that, you had. Most of the time you had 3-person groups. You had your skeptic, you had your believer, and you had your, I don't want to say non-believer, but that was pretty much what they gave. Almost every show had a 3-person group, and it was a believer, a non-believer, and a skeptic that, I really need to see it to believe it. Well, okay, let's put them somewhere like Goldfield Hotel, where bricks and boards and shit launch. And then watch them just lose their ever-loving mind. Now, you know, a seasoned investigator, I mean, you got to admit, Zach, Nick, and Aaron have done numerous locations. They've seen all kinds of crazy shit. But even they lost their flipping minds when that brick and the board took off. Can you imagine?
Yeah, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, but can you imagine, you know, Joe Blow that's never actually done an investigation going in somewhere and seeing that shit? They would go absolutely batshit crazy. It looked like a moment out of a Hey Kool-Aid commercial trying to blow through a brick wall getting the hell out of Dodge. I mean,
yeah.
The episodes that they showed were bad enough. They'd hear a bang or a knock or something and freak out and, you know, bug out. But I swear to God, whichever episode it was, and I wish I knew the name of that place, where the cat kept showing up, oh, my God, that was absolutely hilarious to watch them shit themselves when the cat popped around the corner. And the cat just looked so damn nonchalant, like, hey, man, what's up? Oh, you guys are real. Oh, okay, cool.
And just like Robot Chicken would do it, cats are dicks.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, I was so damn, I got so tickled half the time. I mean, I've still got, they had 5 episodes of Stranded. I've still got them on my DVR, and every now and again I'll play them just to get my laugh on.
Yeah, and by the way, we're not saying that it's a bunk program. But at the same time, come on. Choose a full team of seasoned investigators or researchers.
Yeah, I mean, and I'd love to see, you know, Now, here's my question. None of the other programs show these locations. How did this show end up with them? You know, and what are they up to? You know, how did they find them?
With their 9,000 cameras.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think the show was hilarious. And I think the fact that, you know, they were just not seasoned investigators or researchers or whatever. They were just, you know, Joe Blow off the street that wanted to go check out something different. I think that was a great premise for a program. And I'd love to see it come back.
Yeah, well, that's what Daniel was talking about with fear.
Yeah. You know, now, the other one that cracks me up is Total Blackout. Have you seen that one yet?
Oh, yeah, numerous times.
Yeah, that one just cracks me up. And it's the most mundane shit, but people let their imagination get the best of them when darkness comes in.
It's a snake. No, it's a rope.
Yeah.
But, no, it's a worm. No.
It cracks me up that, and I mean, even as an investigator, I've never had the shit scared out of me. I've been spooked a time or two. Don't get me wrong. I have been spooked. You know, when you're sitting in a dead silent room and all of a sudden you hear a bang or you hear a voice, just all of a sudden you get that what the hell moment. So I have been spooked. I have yet, though, to you know, try to imitate the, hey, Kool-Aid man, and try to blow through a wall on my way out. And I'm sure that, you know, at some point in time, a location is going to get me, and I will have that moment. I kind of look forward to it, actually, and I hope that hell someone gets it on camera. But, you know, it's things like that. I don't know. Some of the programs that are on, you kind of want to reach out, grab the production guys, smack them a few times and go, do you even have the slightest clue what the hell you're doing to the field? I mean,
and they don't. They never will.
No, they... All they care is get ratings, and I understand that. That's why you have a TV program, so you get ratings and you can get paid for commercials. But, damn it, there still needs to be a spokesman for the field. But, all right, and on that note, I am going to jump off of here. I have a friend that called me while we were on the program, so I need to give him a buzz back and see what's going on. So, Matt, would you like to sign us off, sir?
Yes, sir, I will. Join us Wednesday night on Full Spectrum Radio, where we will be talking to spirit medium Ursula Kalin. Sweetheart, like, just absolutely phenomenal. It's for sure something that you want to listen to. Dennis, again, I apologize and condolences to your son-in-law and his family. So thank you to Daniel Hoven. He is always phenomenal, as you know he can be, and what he can be, he's spot on. So the show, I have to say, didn't represent his full knowledge, and Dennis, I believe that you'd agree with me with that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there were a buttload of topics and so forth that we could have gotten into that, you know, would have helped, but we only have 2 hours. So we kind of have to hit on some of the key points and leave it at that and see what happens with it.
Yeah.
But, all right, folks, definitely want to thank you for joining us on Into the Darkness Radio. We'll catch you Wednesday night. Our usual haunt doing Full Spectrum Radio. CPR Dennis, CPR Matt, both on Facebook, both on Twitter, Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers. Yeah, getting my tongue over my eye teeth, can't see what the hell I'm saying. That's a .com address, and it's a Facebook site. So make sure to look us up. If there's anything that you need help with, you're hearing bumps in the night, well, CPR East is based in Richmond, Virginia. We'll be happy to help you out. We've traveled as much as an hour and a half to a location. CPR Original is based in the Chicago area. They'd be more than happy to come out and see what they can do to help you. Don't hesitate to look us up, folks. We appreciate you joining us. Have a blessed night.
Good night.